Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from SIRI, an Alaska Native corporation with operations and investments spanning 5 continents, 45 states, and 2 U.S. territories.
The votes may actually be there for both a special session and for overriding this veto. I think the question is still out there as to whether the votes are there.
Legislators consider a special session to override Governor Dunleavy's budget vetoes. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, June 22nd. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, a new airline hopes to provide a boost to Alaska's economy.
We believe that ultimately we can take the seasonality out of tourism and Alaska.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
If you find yourself asking, what's next? The University of Alaska Anchorage can point you in the right direction. With over 100 fully accredited degree programs and certificates to choose from, plus resources to guide you through your academic experience, your future is in your hands. Whether you're starting over or taking your career to the next level, discover what's next at UAA. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska Anchorage.
Among the projects Governor Mike Dunleavy vetoed from the state budget on Monday was salmon research to help determine the causes of the Chinook and Chum crisis in western Alaska. Dunleavy vetoed about $500,000 for research on the origins of salmon caught by accident in the Bering Sea pollock fishery, as well as the origin of salmon intercepted by fishermen off the Alaska Peninsula in what's known as Area M. The Bering Sea Fishermen's Association was to receive the money and pass it on to a partnership of federal and university scientists. The association's director, Karen Gillis, says Dunleavy also vetoed the project last year.
You never know what's going to come of these budgets, but this is quite a disappointment again.
For the fourth season in a row, subsistence salmon fishermen on the Yukon and Kuskokwim are shut down or severely restricted. Chinook and Chum are returning to those rivers in numbers so low that there's barely enough to meet escapement targets for spawning. Fury is building in the region that thousands of Chinook and Chum are caught every season in the Bering Sea and Area M fisheries. Prior research has shown that only a portion of that salmon bycatch was destined for western Alaska rivers, with many of the fish originating from Asia. Gillis says more research is needed to help understand the policy implications of management decisions.
The genetic work that's been done to date lumps the Norton Sound, Yukon, Kuskokwim, and Bristol Bay stocks into something called coastal western Alaska. So what this work does is studies the otoliths from adult salmon to determine their geographic location or their birthplace, basically.
Otoliths, or ear bones, of salmon bear the chemical fingerprint of the fresh water the fish had swam through, allowing scientists to determine not just which side of the Pacific the fish originated from, but which river system. Gillis says last year's veto halted the project. She says there may be another source for the funding. The governor's office referred questions about the veto to the Department of Fish and Game, which did not respond in time to be included in this story. Some Alaska lawmakers are holding out hope for a groundswell of support to override Governor Dunleavy's line item budget veto on public school funding. Representative Calvin Schrage is an Anchorage nonpartisan who leads the House's largely Democratic minority caucus. He says he asked House Speaker Kathy Tilton, a Wasilla Republican, on Wednesday to poll House members about holding a special session to attempt veto overrides.
I think it's important that we at least do our due diligence in taking the time to figure out where members are at and whether 2/3 of the members of the legislature support going to special session to override this veto.
The legislature can call a special session with the vote of 2/3 of its members. If a special session is convened, then there's an even higher bar to override budget vetoes. That would take 3/4 of the full legislature. Schrage says he heard back from Tilton this afternoon. She told him an informal poll of her members led her to believe that there was not anywhere close to enough votes for a special session. Tilton's caucus of mostly Republicans has the votes to make or break both supermajority votes. The governor's veto to public school funding was the single biggest budget reduction he made. The legislature had adopted a major increase intended to put roughly $680 more per student into schools. The governor cut that one-time increase in half. Tilton said in a statement from her caucus that she believes the cut balances adequate education funding with fiscal responsibility. Still, Shragi says it will take some time for individual school districts to reckon with the latest funding changes, which affect the coming school year.
I think as we learn the impacts of such a low number, the votes may actually be there for both a special session and for overriding this veto. So I think the question is still out there as to whether the votes are there, and I think it's going to take some time for people to know the answer, both collectively and individually, to that question.
Senator Kathy Geisel is an Anchorage Republican and the Senate Majority Leader. Her caucus was responsible for the budget that passed. Geisel said she did not support the governor's vetoes and was far more pessimistic.
No, I don't think there's a path at all. I think we'd be hard pressed to get to 45 legislators that would be willing to override the vetoes.
Meanwhile, the governor can also call the legislature back for a special session on any topic, at which point the Constitution requires lawmakers to reconsider vetoed bills. Jeff Turner, a spokesperson for the governor, said today it has yet to be determined if the governor will call the legislature back for a special session. Former President Donald Trump's indictment continues to roil the Republican Party, and Alaska's two Republican U.S. senators are taking opposite positions. Here to talk to us about it is Alaska Public Media Washington correspondent Liz Ruskin. Liz, hi. Good to have you here in the Anchorage studio.
Hi. Good to be here.
So as many of our listeners know, you write a newsletter called Alaska at Large. In the edition you emailed today, you wrote that it's sometimes hard to believe that Lisa Murkowski and Dan Sullivan are kept in office by the same electorate. Are they really so different, though?
Well, yes, and it's starting to show in their voting records. For several years, they voted the same more than 90% of the time. But in the prior two-year Congress, they agreed just 60% of the time. So far this year, their votes have aligned less than half of the time.
That sounds a little unusual for two senators from the same state and the same party. What kind of votes have they split over?
I should say they are the same on most Alaska-specific things, Willow, Ambler Road, most development questions. But they've split on 80 out of 154 votes so far, primarily over judges and other nominations.
Interesting. And you wrote this week about another fault line. That's former President Trump's indictment.
Right. Senator Sullivan discussed it as an abuse of power and echoed Donald Trump's attacks on the Justice Department. Senator Murkowski says she called the charges quite serious and said that they can't be casually dismissed. And then this week she doubled down on that. Other Republicans continue to attack the Justice Department and the FBI. And Murkowski likens it to the slogan, defund the police. A couple of years ago when left-wing Democrats were saying that, Republicans, and here I'll quote Murkowski, Republicans were saying, are you out of your mind? Now the Republicans are saying, defund the Department of Justice, defund the FBI. And Murkowski's asking, what are we doing, people? That was from an interview she gave with a reporter from the Washington publication The Hill. It's also noteworthy, I think, that Senator Sullivan says the Justice Department, in bringing charges against Trump, is undermining faith in democratic institutions and the rule of law. And meanwhile, Murkowski is saying that Republican attacks on the Justice Department are undermining faith in institutions of democracy.
So to go back to your observation, how is it that the voters of Alaska keep reelecting such very different senators?
Well, it's the same electorate. They're both Republicans, but they've always had different bases of support. Murkowski appeals to more moderates and some Democrats. She's burned all bridges with Trump and Trump supporters at this point. Sullivan, on the other hand, is keeping up with where the GOP is right now. He's navigating the Trump era like a lot of Republicans are, trying, you know, not to tick off Trump's ardent supporters, but also trying not to own all of Trump's faults. Maybe you noticed that his objections to the Trump indictment were about the decision to pursue the case, not about the factual assertions underlying the charges, which he said he hadn't read.
Okay, that was Alaska Public Media Washington correspondent Liz Ruskin and the author of a weekly newsletter called Alaska at Large. You can sign up for that at alaskapublic.org/newsletters. Liz, thanks for being here.
Thank you, Casey.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, inflation is causing some school districts to raise the price of school lunches.
Unlike other states, the state of Alaska does not provide any additional reimbursement monies to school nutrition programs.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
You know that eating fruits and vegetables supports good health, but did you also know that frozen and canned produce offers the same health benefits as fresh? It's true. Whether fresh, frozen, canned, or from the land, eating fruits and veggies can lead to a long and healthy life. So when it comes to getting the fruits and veggies you need to stay healthy, remember, every bite counts. This message sponsored by SNAP.
A woman from the Yukon River village of Marshall has been missing since last week. As KYUK's Francisco Martinez-Cuello reports from Bethel, people in the village have joined public safety officers in the search.
A former Bethel resident is missing. Kimberly O'Doman is a 40-year-old mother of seven and was last seen on June 15th. According to the Missing and Murdered Indigenous Woman USA Facebook page, O'Doman called her mother to say that someone had hit her and she was going to break up a fight near her home in Marshall. O'Doman's mother reported her missing to the Alaska State Troopers on June 16th. According to the post, family members, among other community volunteers, which included the Marshall Village police officer, have been searching and found O'Doman's glasses, which were hidden in the boat docked on land near her home. Alaska State Troopers spokesperson Austin McDaniel wrote via email that local search teams are still searching for her and are currently using hooks to drag the river. McDaniel also wrote that troopers have followed up on tips that the disappearance may be suspicious, but haven't been able to substantiate them. He said an investigator is traveling to Marshall to follow up on leads and interview people. McDaniel wrote that troopers do not currently believe the missing person investigation to be suspicious. If anyone that lives in the community of Marshall has information that has not been shared with law enforcement, you can call the Alaska State Troopers in Bethel at 907-543-2294. That's 907-543-2294. Reference incident AK2306-1306. Anonymous tips can be submitted via the AK Tips smartphone app. People can also contact the Missing and Murdered Indigenous Woman USAA via email. The email address is contact@mmiwusa.org or via direct message through their Facebook page.
That was Francisco Martinez-Cuello in Bethel. For decades, biologists have been dealing with an invasive pike problem in Kenai Peninsula rivers and lakes. And their work was paying off. A few years ago, the problem seemed to be under control. But recent discoveries are raising new questions, and scientists are trying to figure out what comes next. KDLL's Sabine Pooks has more.
It was a very ominous discovery back in 2019. Invasive northern pike in Vogel Lake, at the tip of the Kenai Peninsula. And it raised some red flags for biologists with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. Vogel is a remote lake near Point Possession.
That you have to take a float plane in to access, or a snow machine.
Eric Wood is a fisheries biologist with Fish and Game based in Soldotna. Wood says before the Vogel discovery, biologists on the Kenai Peninsula had only found pike in lakes that were accessible by car. Those pike had likely been illegally put there by fishermen. But that didn't explain why there were pike in Vogel, in such a remote corner of the state.
It didn't really make sense in that regard.
Now, for the first time, researchers have concrete evidence that the fish could use the ocean to move between freshwater habitats, introducing new questions about where those fish can travel and what scientists can do to keep their numbers under control.
This discovery kind of opened the door to a whole bunch of other concerns and questions and things we need to figure out.
Researchers' pike problem has been decades in the making. Northern pike are native to interior and western Alaska, but not to south central. Still, they're a popular species among anglers, and as the story goes, sport fishermen started introducing pike into lakes in the region in the 1950s, causing problems for other fish species. Pike dominate any system they're in, eating salmon and degrading local fish populations. Invasive species biologist Christine Dunker has spent much of her career tracking pike for Fish and Game. She says pike have been found in 150 bodies of water in the region overall. In the Matanuska-Susitna Borough, researchers have had a hard time getting populations under control. On the Kenai Peninsula, the problem's a bit more manageable. Dunker says over two decades, biologists from a handful of local and federal agencies worked hard to eradicate pike on the peninsula.
And thought we had, in 2018, we finished a project in the Tote Road area and thought that that was it, that all known populations were gone at that point. It was like, yay, for about a week.
That's when the department heard from an angler who had found the pike in Vogel. The department was also getting word from some set netters that they were catching pike in Cook Inlet. So, with a researcher in Fairbanks, Fishing Game started testing pike for signs they had traveled through saltwater. They looked for signs in their otoliths, or ear bones, which can absorb traces of the fish's environment.
We thoroughly expected it to have been an illegal introduction again. But when we got the results back and you could see on the graph that, no, this fish actually came from somewhere, spent time in salt water, and then went to a different freshwater location, that was very eye-opening to us, because at this point now we had actual evidence.
Wood says that finding complicates efforts to contain them. And he says inlet conditions could become more favorable for the freshwater fish as glaciers continue to melt.
As to where they came from, how they ended up, where they ended up, we don't know that for sure.
Wood and Dunker both say from the research side of things, the new discoveries are fascinating. Now they're finding marine signatures in pike from other systems too, including two lakes in Anchorage earlier this year. But it does create more challenges on the management side.
The reality of it is there is so much money, so much, tradition and everything tied up with salmon in this area that this could have the potential to wipe out so much. So it is scary in that way, and it's something that I think we do need to focus on.
Dunker says since pike disperse, it's important to prevent populations from spreading.
The big challenge for us now is to try to figure out how do we do that well. When you have a scenario where pike could be moving around marine estuarine, corridors, that makes it a much more difficult problem, but it doesn't make it an impossible one. It just means we have to be kind of smart about it and anticipate where they may be going.
With many questions remaining, Dunker says every fish they can test and study is helpful. She says anglers and fishermen who catch pike should report their sightings to Fish and Game. In Kenai, I'm Sabine Pooks.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Northern Air Cargo, providing cargo transportation to 9 Alaska communities. NAC offers options including cargo charters to get freight where it needs to be. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956.
If you find yourself asking, what's next? The University of Alaska Anchorage can point you in the right direction. With over 100 fully accredited degree programs and certificates to choose from, plus resources to guide you through your academic experience, your future is in your hands. Whether you're starting over or taking your career to the next level, discover what's next at UAA. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska Anchorage.
The head of a new Anchorage-based airline says the company hopes to bring hundreds of jobs and a substantial increase in tourism business to Alaska. Rob McKinney is CEO of the company that owns Raven Alaska, and he describes Northern Pacific Airways as the next evolution of the Raven Alaska brand. Speaking at an unveiling of their new first-class lounge at Ted Stevens Airport Wednesday, McKinney said the new airline will employ 250 people locally, bring millions of dollars in tax revenue to Alaska, and eventually billions to the economy by extending the tourism season.
We believe that ultimately we could take the seasonality out of tourism and Alaska. And if you think about what that translates, everyone just goes as hard as they can for 3.5-4 months. But if you can translate that to 12 months, the amount of jobs that will be created and not be seasonal anymore and just be transformative for the state.
The company's business model relies on Anchorage being a halfway point between the major cities in Eastern Asia and the U.S. McKinney says starting early next year, Northern Pacific will offer flights from cities in Japan and Korea to Anchorage and then to lower 48 destinations. He expects their flights to be 20% cheaper than nonstop competitor flights because of the saved fuel by stopping in Anchorage. McKinney says the concept has already been proven by Icelandair.
Look at the Atlantic. You can easily go nonstop across the Atlantic, yet Icelandair has phenomenal business. They have 50 airplanes, and they're all stopping in Keflavik there in Iceland. So it can be done.
McKinney says by bringing year-round travelers, Iceland increased their tourism 500%. If Alaska were to even double its current tourism, that would translate to billions of dollars in new revenue, McKinney says. Northern Pacific's first flights will be between LA and Las Vegas starting next month as a proof of concept, and they hope to have the Trans-Pacific flights up and running by spring 2024. Alongside Governor Mike Dunleavy's vetoes to education funding, Alaska schools are about to find out how much money they will receive from the federal government for school meals this year. As school districts look ahead at their 2024 budgets, many are under pressure because of steep inflation in the price of food. KFSK's Thomas Copeland reports.
It's a Friday in June, but the Petersburg Elementary School's cafeteria is still teeming with kids. Lunch lady Kitty Brantuis knows them all by name.
Hi, Natalie. Do you want teriyaki chicken or sweet chili chicken?
Terry chicken.
And beside the Terry chicken, there's a full salad bar, too.
From this end, we've got lettuce, bean salad, fresh carrots.
Now,
and
in the summertime, corn, the federal government covers this food for any child who wants it. But that's not the case in the school year. When the semester starts back up this fall, Alaska schools have access to less funding for school meals. And that means they will have to face the full force of inflation. Carly Johnson McIntosh is in charge of the meals at Petersburg Schools. She's watched the cost of her food orders skyrocket.
So if you look at chicken, that has doubled in price compared to what you were able to get it in 2020 or 2021.
According to the latest data from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, the price of food in schools has shot up this year by a chart-topping 294%.
In 2010, when I started, a weekly grocery bill was about $2,000. Now, 1 week's worth of groceries is about $5,000. But the biggest part of that is over the past 2 years.
How school meals are paid for during the semester gets pretty complicated. Basically, the federal government reimburses Alaska schools for many of the meals they serve, but not all of them. Depending on household income, some kids are eligible for free meals, some are eligible for reduced meals, and some pay full price. In Petersburg, more than 60% of students are eligible for free or reduced meals. That's a little under the statewide average of 3/4. In the last year, schools have been able to claw back between $6 and $7 for each free or reduced meal. But the problem is, that reimbursement rate just hasn't kept up with soaring food bills. And that leaves schools with two options. The first is to get thrifty, like Johnson McIntosh in Petersburg.
We try to buy bulk orders to help reduce the cost, and then we plan menus so that if we have any leftovers of one day, we can easily use it in another thing without having any waste or overhead and leftover product.
The second option is to increase the prices for the students who do pay, and that's exactly what the Petersburg School District plans to do. They'll be proposing a 25-cent increase to the standard meal charge at the next school board meeting in August. It might not seem like much, but 5 days a week for a few children, and the quarters start to add up. But even if they do both of those two things, many Alaska schools will still feel the pinch. Trevor Bridgewater is the president of the Alaska School Nutrition Association.
It's definitely a fact that schools are caught between the rising costs of food and a stagnant reimbursement rate, and we are constantly behind the curve on how to fund our programs.
And Bridgewater says Alaska schools face an additional problem.
Unlike other states, the state of Alaska does not provide any additional reimbursement monies to school nutrition programs in Alaska.
The federal reimbursement rates for 2024 are expected any day now. Bridgewater says that if the rate increase isn't enough, schools may have to search for cutbacks, maybe some big ones.
Literally, whether or not certain schools can afford to continue serving meals in schools. The other option is to look at food products that cost less. And food products that cost less are usually of lesser quality.
And back in Petersburg, cutbacks of any kind could face stiff resistance from already picky cafeteria customers.
I don't like it when they serve banana bread.
I don't like spaghetti.
I don't like the carrot very much.
Why not?
I don't know.
Well, 72 kids fed today. That just leaves the washing up. For KFSK, I'm Thomas Copeland.
While most Kodiak residents were celebrating Crab Fest last month, a few were out saving marine mammals. The Shunack Tribe of Kodiak and National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration rescued an entangled sea lion pup as part of training to rescue even more animals. KMXT's Brian Venwal reports.
The Shunack Tribe of Kodiak is the archipelago's main entity for responding to stranded marine mammals. Now they're working towards certification to respond to entangled animals as well. Matt Vandale is the tribe's natural resources director. He says the certification would mean they could respond to injured marine mammals much faster than waiting for dispatched staff from NOAA.
Right now, we have to wait for the team in Juneau to mobilize, get all the way across the Gulf of Alaska, come here and help us out with these things. So if we're able to get the certification and the training, we'll be able to do it ourselves.
The sea lion pup they rescued over Memorial Day weekend was found on the floating dock near St. Herman Harbor. It was the team's first successful entanglement rescue. Vandale says sea lions sometimes play with marine debris but can get seriously hurt in the process. He says this pup was about a year old with some sail twine caught around her neck.
It wasn't just floating in the water like a string, it was actually a closed loop. And it was already cutting, it had cut through her skin, through her fat layer, and I was already cutting into the muscle. And so if we had not intervened, she probably would have perished within 4 to 6 months.
Saving entangled mammals is a long process. They have to carefully approach injured animals, watch for predators, and use tranquilizer darts, all before they even get to surgery. Once the operation is complete, crews administer a reversal to the tranquilizer and monitor the animal until it's fully alert again. The sea lion pup also isn't the only entangled animal out there. Vandale says they found that pup while out searching for three other animals that were reported to have entanglement injuries.
We've been getting consistent reports throughout the spring that these three animals had entanglement injuries. But of course, when everybody showed up to give us our training, they were nowhere to be found. And so the last day, we ended up finding this pup instead that nobody had seen yet. So we know that there are a lot more out there that we're not even aware of.
The Shunack Tribe's team will have their next training session later this summer. Entangled, injured, or stranded animals can be reported to NOAA by calling the Stranding Hotline or the Entanglement Reporting Hotline. In Kodiak, I'm Brian Venois.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org and wherever you get your podcasts. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin, Jeremy Shea, and Michael Finelli in Anchorage, Francisco Martinez Cuello in Bethel, Sabine Pooks in Kenai, Thomas Copeland in Petersburg, and Brian Venois in Kodiak. Our audio engineer is Chris Hyde, Tim Rocky is our producer, and I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Alaska Air Cargo, providing Gold Streak Express shipping for urgent deliveries throughout Alaska, with connections to more than 100 destinations in the lower 48 and Hawaii. More at alaskacargo.com.
And by
Princess Lodges, offering glass-domed railcar tours to Talkeetna and Denali National Park for Alaska summer adventures. Your journey begins at princesslodges.com.
This is statewide news on Alaska Public Media.